Dit is Papa Alpha 0 Echo Tango Echo voor de Daily Minutes nummer 1411 met een uitzending voor vandaag 16 september 2018. Dit is het bulletin van zondag. De data vandaag is net als de afgelopen dagen 8 PSK 1000 bij 1800 Hz. 8 PSK 1000 bij 1800 Hz. Om te beginnen bedankt allemaal voor alle positieve feedback naar aanleiding van de verhuizing van de amateur-ether naar internet van de Daily Minutes over 2 weken. Ik kreeg verschillende reacties die waren alsof ik met de uitzendingen zou stoppen. Dat is beslist niet zo, maar ik moet toegeven dat het voor mij ook wel een beetje als een afscheid voelt. Hoe dan ook, ik stop niet. Ik ga zelfs meerdere dingen aan de Daily Minutes vernieuwen. De uitzending vandaag is grotendeels in het Engels. We beginnen vandaag met het ARRL nieuws en daarna de column van Onno. De uitzending op www.youtube.com/pnlete en de DM-podcast op pnlete.nl. Die duurt iets langer dan in de ether, een aantal minuten. De afgelopen 2 weken is de column van Onno Benschop VK6FLAB niet doorgegaan. Eén keer doordat de Daily Minutes kwam te vervallen en afgelopen week door de ballonvossenjacht. Op internet zijn deze beide columns, eentje over morsecode en de andere over welke afstand je met een signaal kunt overbruggen, aan het eind van de Daily Minutes ook te beluisteren. The remainder of this bulletin is in English.
This is ARRL Audio News, your weekly summary of news highlights from the world of amateur radio.
I'm Carla Pereira, KC1HSX. The ARRL Headquarters Emergency Response Team has activated in response to Hurricane Florence as it impacts the southeastern U.S., where it's expected to bring life-threatening storm surge and rainfall to portions of the Carolinas and Mid-Atlantic states. ARRL shipped 7 handmade kits to South Carolina by way of Georgia on September 11 to assist with emergency preparedness needs in advance of Hurricane Florence. These kits are the same ones that ARRL volunteers took to Puerto Rico a year ago to assist with disaster communications following Hurricane Maria. According to ARRL South Carolina Section Emergency Coordinator Billy Irwin, K9OH, quote, South Carolina Ares is fully activated. We have operators serving 12-hour shifts at the South Carolina Emergency Management Division and will move to 24-hour coverage on Thursday. 2 operators have been deployed to Berkeley County to assist with shelter operations at the request of the emergency coordinator there, unquote. The Hurricane Watch Net, now at alert level 3, is closely monitoring 3 systems, Hurricane Florence, Tropical Storm Isaac, and Invest 95L, currently in the Gulf of Mexico. The net will activate on both its 14.325 MHz and 7.268 MHz frequencies and remain active around the clock as needed. Hurricane WatchNet stations will be on both frequencies throughout the day and evening to talk with stations in the coastal states. The Amateur Radio Association of the Republic of San Marino has announced a special activity from the 3 Towers of San Marino, September 15th and 16th. A group of towers located on the 3 peaks of Monte Titano are depicted on both the national flag and coat of arms. The event will take place in conjunction with a civil protection exercise. The standard 3 Towers Award is issued to a station submitting proof of contact with all the 3 towers on at least 2 bands. The Honor Roll Award requires confirmation of contacts with all 3 towers on 3 bands. Stations will be active on 10, 15, 20, and 40 meters. Call signs will be T71A Guaita, T71B Chesta, and T71C Montali. All 3 towers have historic and architectural significance and are UNESCO World Heritage Sites. You can request QSLs via T70A or via the Bureau. More information is available on the web at www.arrsm.org. ClubLog's DXCC Most Wanted Entities list has been updated. The list includes 340 entities, and the Democratic People's Republic of Korea, DPRK, or North Korea, is the number one most wanted DXCC entity, as it has been for quite a few years. The other top 10 most wanted entities listed in descending order are 3YB Bouvet Island, FT5W Crozet Island, BS7H Scarborough Reef, CE0X San Felix Islands, BV9P Pratas Island, KH7K Cure Island, KH3 Johnston Island, VK0M Macquarie Island, and FT5X Kerguelen Island. The Garden School, K2GSG, and Hall of Science Amateur Radio Clubs, ARC, in New York City, will join forces this month to put amateur radio on display during the 9th Annual World Maker Fair NYC at the New York Hall of Science in Corona, Queens, September 22nd and 23rd. Last year's World Maker Fair NYC drew some 90,000 attendees. The Garden School's Ham Radio Club advisor and science teacher, John Hale, KD2LPM, said participating youngsters will introduce amateur radio and mentor attendees in constructing small electronic Maker Key Morse code oscillators. The project helped Garden School win a blue ribbon at last year's Maker Fair. Visiting radio amateurs will be able to build a tape measure Yagi for satellite or terrestrial use. In cooperation with the Hall of Science ARC, radio amateurs will attempt to make satellite contacts with the tape measure Yagis as a demonstration, Hale said. Team USA took home 10 medals from the just-concluded 2018 Amateur Radio Direction Finding, or ARDF, World Championships, the highest medal count since the U.S. team began participating in the international event 20 years ago. The 19th World ARDF Championships took place September 2nd through the 8th near the resort city of Sokcho in Korea's Gangwon province. Hidden transmitters were scattered in forests encompassing 1,000 acres or more. The U.S. has been represented at every ARDF World Championship event since 1988, with competitions taking place every 2 years. On September 4th, the first day of competition, the U.S. won its first medal of this year as Ruth Bromer, WB4QZG, captured individual third place in the W60 category in the 80-meter fox ring competition. The next day, the team's M50 competitors, Vadima Fonkin, KB1RLI, Nikolai Medjevoy, and Bill Wright, W6CMD, won bronze medals in the classic 2-meter team competition. That same day, the team of Ken Harker, WM5R, and Joe Burkhead won bronze in the M40 category on 80 meters. Team awards are based on the aggregate scores of individual team members who are not permitted to assist one another on the courses. Afonkin took an individual gold medal for his first place finish on 80 meters in the M50 category. In the same event, the M50 category team of Afonkin, Medjevoy, and Wright came away with bronze medals in the 80-meter team competition.
I'm Steve Ford, WB8IMY, and I'm speaking with Bart Yonke, W9JJ, the ARRL Radio Sport Manager. And Bart, where do we stand with the International Grid Chase competition?
Hi, Steve. Thanks for having me on. We are now just closing out the month of August for 2018 for the International Grid Chase. We're beyond the 10th of the month, which allows us to close the books on the month of August. And overall, we had a strong month of activity, not as strong as the previous month of July. We're down about 8.5% overall, but still very healthy, very strong numbers for submissions to Logbook of the World.
Are we still seeing all that FT8 activity you talked about the last time?
We definitely are, Steve. With over 105,000 QSOs being matched through logbook uploads, there was over 65,000 of those were digital. So, again, clearly over 50% were digital. 19,000 of those were phone, 21,000 CW. So, very healthy representation, really in all modes, but particularly digitally.
No, I'm not surprised. And the VHF QSO party was just, last weekend?
It
roughly
was.
Did you notice any uptick from that?
I think we're definitely seeing an increasing trend for right now as K1JT and the group continue to refine the software. It contributes to it being more used during the VHF events, particularly, again, with reference to those using it at VHF, choosing the North America contest mode as a part of the current release. In the particular operation I had, there was definitely a challenge, maybe a balancing act in figuring out where to go to operate because the digital people are up at about 50.313 on 6 meters and again 144.174 or thereabouts on 2 meters. And quite frankly, we also have the meteor scatter modes of MSK144 and FSK441, which had their own frequency as well. So a bit more strategy into how to operate.
Yes, that makes sense. And since we're speaking right now, as Hurricane Florence is bearing down on us. You and I were talking about having to be, well, respectful of the emergency operating frequencies?
Definitely. Again, at the time you hear this podcast, the event will be unfortunately well upon us. But again, as always, practice good operating procedures, listen before transmitting, be wary of the frequencies that have been set aside or identified for the maritime nets, hurricane watch nets, and Saturn nets. And if you can assist or are asked to assist, volunteer. Amateur radio is known for its volunteerism.
Okay, very good. Thank you, Bart.
Thanks, Steve.
And now with this week's satellite update, here's Bruce Page, KK5DO.
Although Hurricane Florence, at the time this story is being recorded, is hours away from making landfall, AMSAT has a satellite with a camera on board. It is AO92. The camera, an experiment of Virginia Tech, was turned on during passes over the East Coast on September 13th and 14th. The images were downloaded on 145.880 MHz FM and decoded. By having multiple stations download the image, it can be stitched together to make a single perfect image. Images were then uploaded to the AMSAT Twitter account. That's at AMSAT. If you would like to download the decoding software, visit AMSAT.org, select Satellite Info, and then choose Telemetry. Once you have the software downloaded, you can download the telemetry from the satellite anytime you like and upload it to the data warehouse. You will also be ready for the next time that the camera is turned on and transmits a picture. Now that you've had an opportunity to listen to or even make a QSO on a satellite, why not join us at the annual AMSAT Symposium? This year it is in Huntsville, Alabama, at the Marriott at the U.S. Space and Rocket Center. The Board of Directors meeting is November 1st and the morning of November 2nd, followed by the symposium the afternoon of November 2nd and all day November 3rd. There will be a banquet Saturday evening. There will also be some tours available on November 4th to the Marshall Space Flight Center and the U.S. Space and Rocket Center. More information can be found at AMSAT.org website. Tickets can be purchased at the website in the online store. This is Bruce Page, KK5DO, for the ARRL Audio News.
Ik ben Onno van de podcast Foundations of Amateur Radio in Australia. En je luistert nu naar de Daily Minutes from Papa Alpha Zero Echo Tango Echo. Foundations of Amateur Radio. The term NVIS, or Near Vertical Incident Skywave, is, in my short experience as an amateur, heaped with scorn and ridicule. Terms like cloud warmer come to mind when people discuss the principles associated with NVIS, but that does happen in the context of where I live, that is, one of the most isolated cities on the planet, Perth in Western Australia. NVIS has several advantages over other forms of HF communication. It can be done with low power, there's little or no signal fading, simple antennas work well, it has low path loss, better signal-to-noise ratios, and if you're in a valley, you can still use it. So what exactly is NVIS? In the past, I've talked about long-distance HF communication. Your radio signal bounces off the ionosphere, bounces back to Earth, and so on. Like skipping a stone on a pond, the angle at which your signal hits the ionosphere determines what happens next. In general, shallow is good, steep is bad. Much like the plop you hear when you don't hit the pond just right, a radio signal can go through the ionosphere, never to be heard again. NVIS is about hitting the ionosphere at a steep angle, in such a way that it reflects back to Earth. Without going into detail, generally you can use 40 meters during the day and 80 meters at night, with some variation depending on the solar cycle and whom you want to talk to. NVIS gives you communications less than 1,000 kilometers away, plenty to talk to everyone in your city and surrounding area. In the case of an emergency, that's also likely enough to get out of any emergency-affected area, so plenty of excuses to set up and try for yourself. I can start talking about angles, maximum usable frequencies, and so on, but I won't. These all relate to specific circumstances, depend on what antenna you're using, what the ground conductivity below you is, and, as is typical in our hobby, many other variables. What I can say is that NVIS to NVIS station works best. So if you're going to test this with a friend, it will help if you both set up a similar station while you learn the variation associated with this kind of communications. Now, I did mention up to 1,000 kilometres. That isn't enough to leave Western Australia. Perth to the border is about 1,500 kilometres. But if you live in the Netherlands, you can get to 15 or so countries. Depending on where you are, NVIS will give you different outcomes, and what I'm talking about affects each station differently. For me, the attraction of NVIS is solid communications on 40 and 80 metres, something that has eluded me so far. It also allows for a low, simple wire antenna, an inverted V dipole, two bits of wire strung up on a pole, 6 metres in the middle, 2.5 metres at the end, will get me up and running. Perfect for a field day, excellent for a local contest, and brilliant if you're only using low power as a beginner. Because the antenna is close to the ground, it's pretty much omnidirectional. If you set up an antenna for 40 metres, then cross that with an 80 metre antenna and feed them both from the same point, you'll have a configuration that will operate well for 24 hours without needing to move antennas in the dark. I have no illusions that an NVIS antenna will help me make contact between Perth and Japan, but then it's not intended for that. I've spoken in the past about finding the right tool for the job. NVIS is a tool. It has a job, and it's very good at doing that. It's not for everyone, all the time, but it's a tool that you, as an ambitious amateur, should know about. I'm Ono, Victor Kilo 6, Foxtrot Lima Alpha Bravo. Foundations of Amateur Radio. A recurring question for people who are not yet or newly licensed is something along the lines of, I have a friend who is 400 kilometres away. Can I talk to them on my handheld 2-metre radio? This particular question arrives in different forms, but generally along the lines of attempting to communicate between point A and point B at some or other distance. The responses, on social media at least, less so on air, are often very technical, or offer the advice to get a license, or to get a clue, or the question is ignored or dismissed. That's not helpful or fair. The person asking the question has expressed an interest in our hobby and is looking for help. As a basic set of answers, if you're both standing on the ground, you'll generally be able to talk about 5 kilometres using your handheld. Stuff between you, like buildings and hills, will lower that distance. If you both stand on a hill, you can talk further away. As an aside, you can talk to the International Space Station with a 2-metre 144 MHz handheld because there is nothing between you and it when it's overhead, even though it's 350 kilometres away. If you cannot see between the two, then an intermediate radio, a repeater, can facilitate the connection. It needs to have visibility to both radios at the same time. The higher the middle point, the further the distance. For example, an antenna at 350 metres above the ground has a so-called radio horizon of 77 kilometres. And I should point out that's actually 15% further than actual line of sight. As long as both ends are within that radius, you should be pretty much good to go. You can theoretically string together a whole bunch of repeaters along a road, for example, but more often than not, for distances greater than line of sight, you need to invoke radio frequencies that your 2-metre handheld won't do. These frequencies are generally referred to as HF and is generally anything between 3 and 30 MHz. Radio transmissions on these frequencies mainly use the ionosphere to make contact possible, and you can make contacts from as close as next door to as far as the opposite side of the world. The ionosphere is subject to weather in much the same way as clouds and rain. The variation in the ionosphere is driven by the sun, not by wind and humidity, and it varies throughout the day as the sun rises and sets. Communication varies depending on where the sun is and several other factors well outside this explanation. As the ionosphere changes, usable frequencies change. Something that worked one moment might not the next because the ionosphere changed. As a licensed radio amateur, you have access to many different frequencies, and depending on the state of the ionosphere, you can change frequency as required to alter your station to suit the conditions. You can think of it as adjusting your sail, depending on the wind direction, to get from A to B. One final point. Antennas are many and varied. They are designed for specific purpose and will react differently depending on how they're designed, built, installed, and used. So the variation you're stepping into is enormous. This hobby is nothing like dialing a phone number and making a connection. It's all about the experience and the learning. If that tickles your fancy, you're already halfway to becoming an amateur. Welcome. I'm Ono, Victor Kilo 6, Foxtrot Lima Alpha Bravo. Foundations of Amateur Radio. Morse code is a way of communicating with people across the globe using dits and dahs and the spaces between them to convey a message. It's no longer required to get an amateur license, but that doesn't mean that it's not useful. In fact, far from it. Morse is still heavily used in this hobby. I've been attempting to learn Morse code for quite some time. To do this, I was told time and time again, over and over, ad nauseam, that Morse is an auditory language. I was told that the way to success was to listen before sending, to be able to decode before ever touching a key, and to learn with tapes. I also was told that if I learned it slowly, I'd run into trouble later on when I wanted to hear a beacon, which identifies itself with much faster Morse code. Morse is an interesting phenomenon. We describe it in words in day-to-day terminology as having dots and dashes, which is how the International Telecommunications Union, the ITU, defines it. But I have been assured that I should think of it in terms of dits and dahs, because that more closely mimics the sound of the language, and from my current experience, I have to agree. This is an audio language, and it's defined in terms of how long a dit takes to transmit. A dit is one time unit. A dah is three dits. The space between a dit and a dah within one letter is one dit. The space between two letters is three dits, and the space between two words is seven dits. I'm not expecting you to learn that right here and now, just pointing out that there is a definition of how this is supposed to work. If you make a dit last longer, everything else lasts longer, so determining how fast you're sending something is not simple to do. Unless there's a standard. Of course, there's a standard. The way that the speed in Morse is defined is by counting how many times a standard word can be sent per minute. The Paris standard uses the word Paris because it is precisely 50 dits in terms of timing. There's another word, codex, which has 60 dits. So the two words per minute are different depending on which standard you use. And to make things even more interesting, some people measure with 5 dits between words, where the ITU specifies 7 dits between words. So speed is variable, depending on who's measuring. The ITU doesn't specify which is right, but it gets better. As I said, this is an audio language, so you need to listen to it to learn it. Over the years, it's been hammered into me, don't write Morse, don't use dits and dahs. Listen, listen, listen. I did. At 25 words per minute, at whatever standard that was calculated, I can now hear Morse. That is, I can detect the gaps between letters and words and I can hear the rhythm of the code. Great. So I'm done, right? Not so fast. While I can hear the individual letters, I still don't actually know what a G sounds like. Or what makes the letter X, or an open parenthesis, or a question mark. Easy. Look them up. Learn the sound. Done. Morse code is a standard, right? Right? Seriously, Morse code is a standard, right? No. Not so much. Not even a little bit. If you search the globe for Morse code charts so you can look up a question mark, you'll end up with hundreds of different charts. Everyone agrees the letter A, or alpha, is dida. But they cannot even agree that N, November, is dadit. Some show the difference between an open and a closed parenthesis. Others use the same character. There's charts that put dits and das inside the letters of the alphabet, but don't specify in which order the parts are heard. The Wireless Institute of Australia doesn't even appear to bother specifying. The Fists Down Under Morse Preservation Society doesn't show a copy. The ARRL has an abomination on their website that you cannot even link to. The ACMA defines the end of transmission as a cross, and then there are the special ones. Survival charts and PowerPoint slides and using words to describe a symbol. So you can know that a fraction bar is da-di-di-da-dit, but you don't actually know what it looks like. You'll be pleased to learn that the ITU actually publishes a document, ITU-RM.1677-1, last updated in October of 2009, that specifies the International Morse Code. It goes into great detail on what characters are defined, how to start and stop transmissions, how to transmit things like percentages, what to do if you need to send a multiplication symbol, inverted commas, minutes and second signs, fractions, and as a bonus, it has the phrase that this document, and I quote, should be used to define the Morse code characters and their applications in the radio communications services. Nothing quite like a standard that should be adopted rather than must be adopted. The ITU also tells us that, quote, the code needs to be updated from time to time to meet the needs of the radio communications services. The French word arrobas, which in English is pronounced at and looks like the letter A with a circle, used today in an email address, was added to Morse code in 2002 by the French General Committee on Terminology. Quick off the mark for a symbol that appeared on a typewriter in 1889 and first used in an email address in 1971, but if you look for an exclamation mark, an ampersand, a dollar symbol, a semicolon or an underscore, you won't find anything about it in the ITU standard. Oh, here's a fun fact. The ITU document says, quote, no part of this publication may be reproduced by any means whatsoever without written permission of the ITU, end quote. So apparently I can't actually tell you that a did-did-did-da-did-da means that this is the end of my transmission. I'm Onno, Victor Kilo 6, Foxtrot, Lima, Alpha Bravo.
Daily Minutes zijn dagelijks vanaf ongeveer 1900 uur te beluisteren via PI2NOS. De uitzending wordt een dag later om 10:30 ochtends herhaald. Alle mail is welkom op het adres x@xdv.me. Dat is ook te vinden rechts bovenaan de webpagina van de uitzendingen www.pa0ete.nl. De Daily Minutes toont iedere dag weer aan de hand van schokkende voorbeelden hoe een hobby mensenlevens kan veranderen. De Daily Minutes komt tot stand mede dankzij de stichting Scope Hobbyfonds. Dit is Papa Alpha 0 Echo Tango Echo.
En microfoon naar retour.